Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hello and welcome into the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. I am Kevin. Joined with me as always, my podcast co-host, partner, friend, confidant, guy I sit with at games sometimes. Andrew, how you doing, Andrew?
Kevin, merry basketball Christmas Eve. Basketball starts tomorrow. Regular season starts tomorrow. We've had a little exhibition game, just kind of like grandma giving you a present early. Something small, you know, something to tide you over. But the real thing starts tomorrow and lasts for quite a while. So I'm ready for a ride this season. But Kevin, we've got a lot to talk about, including KU football getting a Big 12 win last weekend. Lot to talk about. Got the UC Santa Barbara game coming up, Kentucky game. Tell us what we're going to do today.
We are going to do a lot, Andrew. As you mentioned, we got takeaways from the exhibition season. We got some basketball over-unders. We're going to look around college basketball as a whole. We're going to talk a little UC Santa Barbara. I don't think this game is just going to be a, you know, walk in the park. It's not going to be a picnic down there in Lawrence. It's going to be a little interesting. And then we're going to preview the Kentucky game with friend of the podcast, George Barrett, out there in Kentucky. So we got a lot to talk about. And as you mentioned, a little football at the end.
But first, let's talk about the exhibition game. So I've been to the past two. And if you are keeping up on the podcast, if you're keeping up on the storyline, the soap opera, that is the Jayhawk Talk podcast. You will know that I missed the first half of the first game against Washburn, but I made it for the full game this time.
Nice. Yeah,
and thoroughly enjoyed it. So big accomplishment for me. Uh-huh. No tire issues, no nothing.
Good.
All good. I can tell you that I really had a good time at that game. It didn't really seem like we scored 108 points. But we did. It kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And also, I'll tell you this, and maybe this is a precursor of things to come, and you can tell me your reaction on watching on TV, but in the second half, when Cliff Alexander had the three dunks in the block all in the span of about a minute, that's probably the rowdiest I've seen or heard the Fieldhouse get for an exhibition game in as long as I can remember. It got pretty crazy.
Yeah, that second half was really good. The first half, I think they just kind of bumbled around. It just wasn't, it felt like a bad 25 point lead or something. I don't know how you can say it, but it didn't look like they're really playing that well. And then the second half, they just came out gangbusters, which is usually the opposite on these exhibition games. You know, usually they kind of come out strong early and then they just kind of loaf through the second half. I think Bill might have had a few words for him in that locker room at halftime. They came out a little crazy. It was a good game in the second half especially. Nice to see Cliff get going a little bit, as you mentioned. Kind of interesting that he was the 11th guy to check in to play for this Kansas basketball team in that game. You heard some reports that maybe he wasn't doing as well in practice and that some of the other guys were, and so he was kind of getting I don't know that he was benched, you know, or whatever, but, you know, played some other guys in front of him, thought they deserved it a little more. But Cliff came out and obviously showed what he could do in the second half.
And he ended up having the same amount of minutes as you'd think he'd get anyway. So it all kind of worked out. In games against Emporia, you're afforded that luxury of not being able to play him in the first 10 minutes. You're not going to have that luxury coming up, especially in the next two games with the big guys that we're going to see. Something we're not going to see for the rest of the season, which is quite amazing. In the second half, I believe the Jayhawks scored 1.74 points per possession.
Wow.
Which is that's impossible. That's a stat that doesn't happen. So it's not something we're going to see for the rest of the season. Fun to watch it at the time, though. I believe in that half scored 65. It's 65 points or so. And Tyler Self and company played the last 4 minutes. So that could have been with the big dogs, you know, 70-80 point.
Evan Manning's draining threes out there.
He drained one three.
Well,
he
missed some other ones. Threes.
He drained one three. Almost saw Tyler Self get a good bucket at the end, but just ran out of time.
Ran out of time. Yep.
Ran out of time.
So one of the other things I guess you could take away from the exhibition is I don't really want to say it's been a slow start for some of the veteran guys. You know, Perry looked just okay, you know, early. He kind of came on and got his numbers, and Wayne's been a little slow. You know, he shows spurts. I'm really not going to put anything into this, of course, because as we know, it's the exhibition season, and I got to think that maybe they're deferring to the young guys a little bit to get them some, you know, get them acclimated and comfortable with playing in front of big crowds and things like that. So I think you and I can take a little bit more away from the next game than we can these first two in terms of, you know, really taking anything important away. But I did want to say it's a little interesting how Self has handled the freshman minutes so far. I want to ask you, Andrew, what do you think? I want you to rank the freshmen in terms of the minutes they're going to play average this year. So we're talking Cliff, we're talking Kelly, Svi, and Graham. Rank them in terms of the amount of minutes. I'm kind of curious on this because I'm not sure I know.
Just off the top of my head, going with my gut, Cliff Alexander. Not a lot of guys like him on the team. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot of big guys. I know Jamari's out there, but, I mean, that's a point of weakness in terms of big guys down low. He's going to be needed and will need to play a lot of minutes. So that's why I put him number one. Number two, probably Kelly Oubre, because I think talent wins out in the end. I think he's got a lot of it, and he'll be on the floor because of it. And then I still think they get a lot of minutes, but I think it goes Graham and then Svi.
Okay.
Sviatoslav. I don't like saying Svi. I like doing the full name.
Yeah, me too.
Sviatoslav. So I think those are my four, but I still think, you know, by putting Svi fourth, that it makes it seem like he's not going to get a lot. I still think he's going to get a lot. The only problem is he is 17 years old.
Well, sometimes it doesn't show out there, man. He kind of glides out on the court. His defense is just blowing my mind. You gotta watch a game like on rewind. You know, when you get home, rewatch a game with just watch Fee on defense. Like that's all I want you to watch. It's kind of mind blowing. I could see why. I mean, he moves. He's got good basketball IQ. Anyway, my wife was really upset that the announcers wouldn't say Mikhailuk or Sviatoslav, but they call everyone else by their full name. They just call him Svi because she didn't
just learn the name.
She didn't think they could pronounce it.
Learn the name, people.
It was kind of funny. Other than that, man, I don't think there's a whole lot to take away from the exhibition season.
I got one question for you.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so before you make your last point, here's what I'm thinking. So Bill Self has said his starting lineup that he knows going in is Mason Selden, Jamari, and Perry. So that's four that are solid starters. Based on what you've seen in the exhibition, who gets that fifth spot? And that's the three spot, the two spot, most likely the three spot, depending on where you put Selden. So it's your wing player. Who has anyone shown something to you that you think that they have earned it? Who's going to be playing against Kentucky? Who's going to be playing against the Gauchos?
That's really tough because if we're just going off of, you know, what we saw in these exhibition games, I'm not sure there's a leader of the pack between Oubre, Sviatoslav, Brandon Green, or Devontae Graham. I don't know that there's been like one person you're like, man, that's the one that's going to be this spot. But I'm sure there is in practice. So that's kind of the, you know, he has a little bigger picture, but I don't know. I guess I'd go with Oubre only because I think we're going to need his athleticism, especially, you know, we're going to need his length playing Kentucky here in a couple games. I'd like to get him used to being out there to start the game. But then again, Bill has said he's a little amped up sometimes. He needs to, you know, take it easy, slow the game down. Maybe coming off the bench will help him. So I guess I'll go with Oubre, but I don't feel great about it. What about you?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
It's tough.
I'm probably going to say Brandon Green for the first game. And see how he does. Just because Bill Self likes to err on the side of putting in the veteran. Yeah. He's only a sophomore, so that's not going to say a whole lot. But Brandon Green has a tendency to do a lot of dumb stuff. And that may translate over into practice. So if he does like something dumb on the last play of practice, like that may cost him that role. So so I don't know. I don't know who's going to get it, but I'm going to go ahead and say Brandon Green.
Okay. I have nothing to say to that. I mean, that is just as likely to me than anybody else. Let's talk some over-unders.
All right. So we've got a couple of these. I came up with three for a player, and Kevin came up with three for a player. Feel free to play along at home, but this first one has a little bit of a preface and some accolades that we need to throw towards our good buddy Perry Ellis. Perry will probably become a 1,000-point scorer this year, and I think that becoming a 1,000-point scorer is kind of a big deal in college basketball.
Yeah.
These days, that means you've stuck around for a while and been pretty successful. You don't see a lot of them anymore among the elite players because, you know, they go to the NBA. So, you know, in the Bill Self era, I mean, players that Bill Self recruited, only a handful have become 1,000-point scorers. That's Sharon, Tyshawn, Brandon Rush, Marcus Morris, Mario Chalmers, Cole Aldrich, and Thomas Robinson barely made it. So last year, Perry scored 472 points. He's got a total of 688. My over-under for you, Kevin, is will he become a 1,000-point scorer by February 1st?
So he's got 688 points.
He's
got
to average about 15 to get
there. Yeah, I'm trying to do the math in my head.
That puts him right on.
I think he will. I think he's going to need to. I mean, I think he's going to have to score points this year. This team's going to need him to score 15 a game, especially early. I think they're really going to, you know, lean on him to be the main offensive scorer on this team. Some of it's going to be garbage. Hopefully a lot of it's free throws because that means he's, you know, he's getting involved, banging around a little bit. I think he'll get there. What about you?
Yeah, I think he'll get there. I think it'll be close. I think he'll average 15, 16 a game.
All right. What's just next?
Okay. The next one, we may have talked about this on the podcast already because some of our conversations, I don't know if I've had it on the podcast or just randomly
in a bar over text message.
I don't know if we've done this yet, but okay. You're a big fan in quotation marks. I don't know if you actually are, of Perry Ellis dunks.
Perry dunks.
You make no bones about this. So will Perry have 13 dunks in the regular season? That's the non-conference and conference, not going into Big 12, not going into the tournament. 13 dunks total.
Oh,
over,
man.
Or under?
I'm going to go.
People are yelling at you at home. They're yelling at you through their phones in their cars. Like, Kevin, pick the over. Kevin, pick the over.
He's had one. He's had one so far. So if you extrapolate that out, that means he would have over the course of the regular season. But then again, he's playing some short guys. I'm going to take the under. Sorry.
Wow, Perry Dunk City, not getting much love from Kevin.
I'm going to count them, though.
But so this last one, over-under for Perry Ellis, kind of along the same lines. Perry's been kind of playing a little more perimeter game, at least in the exhibition, and he's made some comments that that's what he's going to do this season. Last year, he shot 47.1% from the three-point line. Now, I think he went 8 for 17. Or 7 for 18, something like that. So he didn't, you know, take a whole lot. He's going to be taking more this year. I think we can agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Over under 38% from the three-point line.
I'm going to take the over because I think he's going to take good threes.
I'm going to just for a point of reference, Tyrell Reed shot 40% for his career.
Right. But
so he's going to shoot as well as Tyrell Reed from three.
He had a guy in his face. No one's going to be guarding Perry at the three. I think he's going to get a lot of wide open threes at the top of the key because they're going to give it to him. I think those are the ones he shoots. I don't think he's going to be shooting, you know, silly threes. And here's the thing. If he has any sense, which I think he's a pretty smart kid, he's going to have to be able to stretch the floor if he wants to play at the next level. So I hope to God he's been practicing those three-pointers and that's, you know, those 15-footers all off season, because if he has any desire to play at the next level, he's going to have to play the three. And so, you know, I guess I'm going off that. I feel like he's been shooting a lot out there. I think he'll be pretty good. So I'll take the over. I think it sounds like a fun bet. You know, I gave him the shaft on the dunks. I'll give him a little love on the threes.
Okay, I'll take that.
You got another one, or is that it?
That's it. I've got three for you.
Okay, I've got three for you, but they're not for the same player. I did three different ones. The first one, Cliff Alexander, Andrew. I'm going to set the over-under at 1.5 per game. These are dunks. As an average over the course of the season, 1.5 per game, over-under.
Over.
Yeah, I think I do too.
I don't think it quite gets to 2 per game, average-wise, but I take the over. And I feel pretty confident about that.
Do me a favor. Like, I think we should count the dunks between Cliff and Perry this year.
I think we should count dunks as a stat. Like, just keep that as a stat for everybody.
I agree. Okay. Here's another one. Oubre. Here's the question. 19 and a half minutes per game. Over, under.
Over.
What about for the non-con schedule?
Oh, that's a good question. Woo! Under.
Okay. I think that's close. I might take the over for both, but I'm not in love with it. Okay, and Landon Lucas making an appearance on the podcast, Andrew. Landon Lucas over under 15 minutes versus UK.
I think that he's going to need to play against those big guys. I say over.
All right.
I say it's probably like 16 or 17, but I think that it's a necessity that he's out there.
I thought that was an interesting one because I think he might need to play a little bit too. I don't know if he'll get 15 minutes though. I might take the under, but barely. All right, let's get away from these over-unders. But Andrew, we got to talk about college basketball, like as a whole, like it's back. We are talking about college basketball on ESPN. People are talking about college basketball in the newspapers. Rustin Dodd is so excited he doesn't have to go to Memorial Stadium anymore. He can start going to Allen Fieldhouse every week. We got to talk about college basketball. And, you know, last week we previewed the Big 12 a little bit. We gave our Big 12 preview. This week, Andrew, I want to look at where KU fits on more of the national picture. The AP Top 25 came out. We got KU as the number 5 team. You're hearing a lot of people talking to this time of year, making their picks, taking their shots on Final Four teams and, you know, whatever else. And not a lot of love for KU, surprisingly, out there. I mean, there's four teams that seem to be really leading the conversation, and that is Kentucky, Arizona, Wisconsin, and Duke. And so I just wanted to fit a few minutes in here to talk about these other teams. I know you guys have all been, you know, you're probably like us. You've been thinking about baseball for a while, and that's over. And, you know, football is out there, people playing fantasy football. Maybe you haven't been paying attention a little bit to college hoops as a whole. And we got a bunch of, we got a really intriguing season in front of us. There's, you know, it's not like we've got the Andrew Wigginses and the Jabari Parkers. It seems like it's going to be more of a team game this year. And, you know, we say that now, I'm sure there's going to be stars, but I just wanted to run through a few of these teams real fast. Of course, we'll talk about Kentucky later on, but Andrew, the team that scares me the most in college basketball, and this includes Kentucky, is Arizona. Have you been paying attention to Arizona at all in this offseason or you know, watching that team?
I think a lot of people regard them as, you know, if Kentucky's the front runner one, Arizona's the front runner 1B. You know, from UK 1A, Arizona 1B. Because, I mean, they have got a lot returning. Lost Aaron Gordon, you know, maybe their best player, but a lot of people coming back. Stanley Johnson is coming in as a freshman.
Very good.
He'll be a top pick, but probably not even the best player on the team. Got a lot of older guys, guy that we're familiar with, Caleb Tarzewski, who we thought we had a grasp on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, definitely a solid team. And, you know, ESPN came out with their predictions. Kentucky, I think, among their experts, had 9 out of 20 pick. Or it was something like that. 9 out of 20 picked them. But Arizona had 8. I mean, they were just slightly behind. So I think they're also a front runner, and a lot of people like them better than Kentucky. And, you know, they may be right.
I do. In fact, I like a few teams better than Kentucky. I don't. Wisconsin, unfortunately, is not one of them, but I like them. They are the second or the third team, I'm sorry, in the ranks. They're of course led by center Frank Kaminsky, who just came in like a like crazy last season and scored all these points. People put up a 40 burger when everyone started paying attention to him. He's a preseason All-American. They got Sam Decker. He's a potential lottery pick. I don't think there's anyone in the Big Ten that's going to even get close to challenging Wisconsin this year. Everybody else in the Big Ten is down. Wisconsin is as high as they've ever been. Bo Ryan, I think, leads these this team to the Big Ten championship, and as a result, ends up getting a one seed pretty easily. Let's talk about Duke, though, because they're an intriguing team. They've got Tyus Jones and Okafor, as we know. We were after these two guys. They got Justice Winslow, also a highly regarded recruit. Those three might be starting for a Coach K team. Feels a little weird to have three freshman starters, but it's going to be interesting. They stack up with quite a few teams there in the ACC at the top of the conference. You can talk about UNC, talk about Virginia, Syracuse, Louisville. I know it's weird to talk about those two teams in the ACC, but those guys are all going to be, you know, battling. Virginia, if I didn't mention them, will all be battling there at the top. And then there's like nothing else in the ACC. So that'll be an interesting conference to watch. And we'll talk about UNC for a second here. And I want to ask you a question. You know Roy. I mean, we all kind of know Roy. He's kind of seems like one of those guys that kind of takes, doesn't really take this kind of off-court stuff very well. What do you think he's going to be like this year with all these, you know, allegations and things going on? Do you think that'll seep onto the court at all?
I don't think so. I mean, he's still a coach. He's still going to do his go through his practice and teach his guys. And he's got a pretty talented team. You know, you talk about guys on his team like Marcus Page, Kennedy Meeks coming back as a sophomore, should be a good player. I still think they're a top five, top six, top seven team. We'll be competitive with Duke in the ACC. I don't see that happening. Have we seen that? I mean, has that happened before? Yeah. They've always bounced back. Like, Roy knows what he's doing. He may seem like an emotional guy, and he absolutely is.
Yeah.
But I don't think that affects them on the court.
All right. Well, a couple more here. We want to talk about Florida because we're going to see them this year. I think it's December 5th at Allen Fieldhouse, probably the premier non-con game of the year at Allen Fieldhouse. They had four senior starters, as we know, last year, Andrew. Remember the dialogue when we played them? They had all the starter seniors. We had all the freshmen. They kind of got the best of us. But returning as a starter is only Michael Frazier. But, of course, they still have Casey Hill and Chris Walker back. The SEC is not very good. So I assume they're going to be back toward the top of the top of their league as well. They're with Kentucky. So I think they'll be, in line to maybe get that two seed again, somewhere around in there. I think they're going to be pretty good. Let's move on real quick to talk two teams there in the ACC. Louisville lost Russ Smith, but Harrell returns. He's going to be a load. It's weird that they're in the ACC. I'm still not getting that. It feels not right. Are you with me? Are you used to this stuff yet? Because I'm not.
No, it's going to be weird seeing them there. This is the first year that they've been in the ACC, right?
Yeah.
Right. So this is last year was the America, whatever.
Right.
It's going to be because you're used to seeing Duke, North Carolina, like at the top, battling it out. And that's not always the truth, but for the most part is. It's going to be Louisville jumping right in there.
Yeah. What's weirder?
And Syracuse.
Yeah.
Syracuse is going to be up there too. So it's. I mean, we'll get used to it. It's the new normal here in the ACC, but we'll get used to it.
What's weirder, and then, tell me this real fast, them being in the ACC or Maryland being in the Big Ten?
Maryland, other than Turge, is so far off my radar that I don't even care.
It's so weird. Anyway, sorry.
Let's close out the ACC. Let's talk about Virginia. Crashed the party last year and were the ACC champs. We're a one seed in the tournament last year. Can they keep it up? Can they repeat this magic? Or is this kind of a one and done type of deal? Do you see them at the top?
I don't. I think the system is good enough to get a lot of wins. They're going to be back in the tournament. Tony Bennett's a heck of a coach. He's got his system. He's got things working. They got Malcolm Brogdon back, who's pretty good. But I just don't see him being able to repeat in the ACC, or even, you know, I think they're more of like the fifth best team in the ACC. But they're in the preseason top 10, so we're talking about them. What about Texas? You know, we talked about them a little bit last time, but they round out the preseason AP top 10 at number 10. Obviously, their front court's silly stupid with Ridley, Holmes, and Turner. And they got Taylor there at the point. Will Barnes be able to put it all together, though? That's the question.
I don't know. They've got a lot of talent there. If he messes that up, that's his fault.
I just want to add one more here, Andrew. Number 11, our good friends down in the good city of Wichita. Wichita State, preseason number 11. Ron Baker, Fred Van Vliet are back. I was looking at their schedule. Honestly, I think it might be easier than last year. Like, they might run the table again. I mean, they might win a lot of games again. And I think they're going to be back in the conversation for a top seed again. I think they're going to be a really annoying team on the polls, because you're going to keep seeing them just slowly rise up because other teams are going to lose. You're going to have like an 11-3 Louisville team that's just like, you know, number 13 in the polls because they've lost three games to, you know, Indiana and Kentucky and who else they play.
All right, let's take a look at their schedule and see who's on there in terms of who they could be beaten by, or what's this going to look like. Can they run the table again? First of all, I'm going to tell you, I don't think that they will. You've got your traditional folks in the Missouri Valley. You've got your Drakes, your Northern Iowas. I don't know who else is going to be good this year. Nah, but they do play a couple tough non-conference games.
What do they got, Utah and Memphis or something?
Well, they've got Memphis on November 18th, so just a couple short days away, and that's in a neutral site game, and I don't know where the neutral site is. But Memphis, however, I don't know if you saw, Memphis just lost to Christian Brothers University in an exhibition game in overtime. So these Memphis Tigers, we're getting votes for the top 25. Maybe not so formidable.
No.
Play at Utah. That might be their toughest
game. That's their toughest game. I agree.
They play Seton Hall at home. They play St. Louis at home. Alabama at home.
No. Yeah.
I don't know.
There you go.
I don't know. I don't think they will, but, you know, it's setting up pretty well for them.
Andrew, I want to talk, you know, this time of year, you get a certain segment of KU fans that just, like, root against the Big 12 during non-con. I'm not that guy. I don't think you're that guy. In fact, I think, you know, most KU fans that, you know, follow basketball, they kind of want the Big 12 to do well. Obviously, that makes your RPI better, things like that. We used to, like, not root for Missouri and root for everyone else. Like, that made sense. I get that. But I think this year we really need to root for the Big 12. It will help everybody if our RPI continues to be, you know, really good, which obviously last year it was, like, ridiculously good. And the two teams that we really need to win some games in this year non-con are our good friends down in TCU and Texas Tech. Those are the teams that need to knock off a few teams to get that RPI up a little bit, because I think everyone else is going to carry their weight. So Texas Tech plays at LSU. They play Air Force, Auburn, and Fresno State. So come on, Red Raiders, win a couple of those games. And TCU plays Washington State, SLU, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. So they're going to have to win a couple of those as well. I think that'll help everybody out. But a couple of games that jump out on the Big 12 front. You know, Texas is going to play Kentucky, which will be a fun game. Iowa State plays Iowa. That's interesting. They'll probably play Arkansas too, which will be interesting. Oklahoma plays our good friends Missouri for an interesting game there. And then K-State, Andrew, they're out there in Maui. If they win their first game against Purdue, they will play the winner of Arizona and Missouri. So they're going to play Arizona. So that'll be a potentially very interesting game for K-State early on in the season. So just a couple to jump out there that people want to watch for. There's going to be a fun – I love college basketball season, because you just turn on ESPN, you turn on TV, and guess what? Every day of the week, there's a college basketball game on. It's the best. I'm so excited. So one last thing before we get out of here on this topic. Andrew, pick your Final Four.
Hold on. I've got to talk about the Big 12 a little bit.
No, we're done.
You spoke for me when you said that you and I both root for the Big 12. And I didn't get a chance to jump in.
I'm sorry.
I think that I default towards rooting for the Big 12. But I pick and choose.
Okay.
I think that there are certain spots where I'm like, no, not going to root for that team.
Okay.
When Iowa State won a bunch of games in a row last year, they were flying a little too close to the sun. They were not going to get my rooting interest. They started a little jibber-jabber, a little chit-chat. No, I'm not going to root for them. So, and I think that may happen with Texas this year.
Understandable.
I may not. I'm just going to pick and choose. But by and large, I'm going to root for the Big 12. But I'm going to tell the folks at home, it's okay if you want to root against a couple of Big 12 teams here and there. You know, just pick your battles.
I want K-State to beat Arizona. Is that crazy?
No.
I think that'd be a lot of fun because I think we're going to obviously beat them several times this year. So, not obviously, but you can, you know, let them win a couple of games. Get that RPI up. Helps everybody, Andrew. Give me your Final Four, damn it.
Okay, now we're moving on. Damn it. This is going to be tough. When you pick these things so early, you want to pick your four best teams.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to pick DePaul, you know, or some random team that might squeeze in. But I'm going to go Kansas. You've heard of that team.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky. Duke. And, man, Arizona.
Okay. I'm going to go with Arizona, Duke, Wisconsin, and Kansas. No Kentucky.
No Kentucky.
No Kentucky. We're going to talk about Kentucky a little later. But before we do that, Andrew, let's preview tomorrow night's game, UC Santa Barbara. What do you say? This team will be coming in for the first game against KU. KU has won like their past, I don't know, 70 first games at Allen Fieldhouse. It can't be 70. It's not that many, but it's some ridiculous first games get result that we haven't lost since like the 70s. So that, you know, it's going to be tough for them, but I think this is going to be an interesting team. They went 21-9 last year in the Big West Conference, of course. And they have, Andrew, you had mentioned last podcast, Alan Williams, their senior forward. He led the nation in rebounding last season. He had 11.5 boards a game. He also averaged 21.5 points per game. So he's a double-double machine. And apparently, you know, he played one game this, you know, one of their exhibition games. He had 20-19 in their exhibition game. So he's going to be an interesting guy to watch, match up with our bigs. I don't think he's very tall. I can't remember. I think I looked it up. He's like 6'7 or 6'8.
He's 6'8.
Okay.
He's a Thomas Robinson type. He's probably a lot like Cliff Alexander.
Yeah.
The similar game. He's just, you know, a little older, a little more experienced, and plays in the Big West.
The Big West.
But I mean, he's still a talented player. I just want to say something here, Kevin. I'm glad. Do you know how I know that you're excited about college basketball? Is that you know who Alan Williams is now. Because I talked about him last week, and you didn't know who the hell I was talking about.
No freaking clue.
Now you're like well versed in his curriculum vitae of what he's done the past 3 years.
I've done some
research in the past 8 days or so.
I told you, Andrew. Like I've made the switch. Like something happened. It was just like, you know, I'm still into fantasy football. I'm still kind of have a Royals hangover. Gone. All deep college
cuts.
Basketball.
Deep cuts when you're pulling out Alan Williams statistics. But, you know, he's a guy you got to respect coming up. One thing I want to add before we move on about this team is that we're going to have to do a little bit of defensive maneuvering that teams usually do to us in terms of you got to guard the monster down low, probably bring somebody over to double team Alan Williams because you can get away with it. But you usually see that those teams run it against us. You run it a double team against Embiid. Run a double team against Thomas Robinson. We're going to have to emulate that type of defense against this guy. And that's kind of awkward and kind of weird for a first game of the year. But I think that will be a running theme
is trying to guard the post. How good are we going to be at guarding the post? And this will be a good first test.
I wonder if we get up in the game. This will be something to watch, you know, especially if we get up, give you something to think about as you're watching the game. There's a ton of good bigs in the Big 12. There's a ton of good bigs we're going to be playing throughout the season, obviously starting with Kentucky. It makes you wonder, maybe in the first half, they do some of that double team and trap and things like that on the post to guard Williams. But if we get up by, 12, 15 points, I wonder if they start letting people, letting Cliff guard him man-to-man. Just to get used to having to guard that caliber of player, just see how he does. Because he's going to have to happen this year. I mean, we play Texas. We're not going to be able to trap. We got three big guys that are going to be able to throw it at you. Kentucky's the same way. They got some crazy length in the post. I wonder if, I think that's a good thing to watch for. If they'll do some traps early and then maybe abandon that later on in the game. So I think that's probably, maybe even the biggest, matchup to watch in this game. That's something I'll definitely be watching for. UC Santa Barbara, Andrew, we have played them before. One time we played them in the opening round of the Wolfpack Classic in 2003 in Reno, Nevada. This was, of course, Bill Self's first season in 2003. We won 72-52. So there you go. Hopefully we can do outdo the 72-52 that Bill Self's initial team put on the old UC Santa Barbara. What's their mascot? What is it?
Gauchos.
The Gauchos.
That's the Gauchos. Right. Don't mess that up. That's a good one.
I'm sorry. All right. Well, hey, what do you say we stop here for a second? We'll bring on our buddy George here from Kentucky to talk to us a little bit about the Champions Classic. All right, we are back, and we are joined by friend of the podcast, George Barrett of Kentucky Fandom, also formerly of the Fantasy Fumble podcast. Got me started in podcasting doing that. I really appreciate all the help he's had. Instrumental, Andrew, to setting up this podcast right here in Jayhawk Talk. George, how you doing?
Kevin, it is great to be talking to you again on a podcast. Hopefully you guys are a little bit above average. And I'm just glad to be talking college basketball, man. It's been a long football season. As KU fans probably feel the same way.
Yeah, we do. But, we just got to win. I know you guys just didn't win. So I don't know how you feel about that. KU football is 1-0 in the last week. That's all I got to say.
Do you guys care, to be honest with you? Because I have annoying U of L fans all the time around me, and they love to just make fun of UK football. And, we don't care at all. It's just we're just waiting for basketball season. Is that the way you guys feel?
We want to be good.
We want to care. We want to so bad.
Yeah.
But it's tough.
It's tough. Our
basketball teams are so much better. Like, let's just watch good sports, right? There is an NFL out there. There's a good product to watch.
I will say this, George. Whenever we put KU football in the podcast title, you can just cut the podcast number in third.
Exactly. No one's downloading that. Come on.
But maybe if we get good, it'll change. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Champions Classic. We've got this this made-for-TV event coming up here. You and I, George, went to this last year up in Chicago. You had an extra ticket. I don't remember how it came down, but you were like, hey, come with me. We got an extra ticket. You could come up here and sit with us in the Kentucky section. And I think I told the story on the podcast about how there was like a bunch of Kentucky fans in front of us getting drunk, like fighting KU fans. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, of course. And now I think it's funny the way you say that. There was some Kentucky fans drinking bourbon, as we call refreshments. But we did have a KU fan that was pretty much blackout drunk, which was a great way of class separation, too. In the luxury box, leaning over to us poor hillbillies, screaming about Calipari cheats. It was that moment that I realized, is there some pent-up aggression between Kansas fans and Calipari or Kansas fans and UK? Because I didn't realize we were a rivalry until that experience.
No, I think it was just that guy.
Fisticuffs. Just that guy?
I think it was just that guy. But the guys in front of us were no help. They were kind of instigating. I don't know if you recall.
Oh, Kentucky fans are very simple. We love our team, but unfortunately, we don't exactly represent a metropolitan community sometimes. Sometimes we could be a little simple-minded, and we don't like to hear anyone disagreeing with us.
That sounds about right. I'll buy into that. So talk to us a little bit about this team, George. You obviously have, a senior laden team with a bunch of returning veterans, right. as per normal, actually,
yeah.
I kind of joke, but you do have some veterans.
Yeah. I didn't even realize what you were saying, 'cause I thought you were being serious. It feels like our roles are reversed in this game. You know, I'm looking at your all's lineup and it seems like a lot of your talent is going to come from the young freshmen. And we're kind of relying on a couple of juniors in the starting lineup and mainly our sophomore class, the guys that were supposed to be 40-0 last year. hopefully we'll have another shot at least a chance of the title. We're trying to not speak 40-0 in the fanhood right now.
Probably good.
Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit. That was all the rage. There was the t-shirts.
Right.
But that's kind of taboo.
The tattoos.
Oh, tattoos. Yeah. But no one's saying this this year. No one wants to jinx it. What's the
exactly thing? That? We're all thinking it. We're all thinking it, but we don't want to jinx it and say it out loud. And I imagine there have been a few people already getting tattoos this year yet again. But it's the best team. To be honest with you, this is the best team I've watched in college basketball since I've been alive. I guess outside of the kind of golden age when we were first growing up with, you know, people like Christian Laettner and people who had stayed through college. Since people started going to the pros, this is the best team I have seen. It's kind of like watching a FIBA team where we have like a USA FIBA team where we have so much talent that it's kind of weird that they don't know who's supposed to take the ball in certain cases, who's supposed to be the dominant player on the court. But I've never seen kind of a collection of talent and an approach to basketball like this, really.
So it seems to me like, you know, you heard Larry Brown come out today and say that Calipari's starting five would be number one in the nation and Calipari's second five would be number two in the nation. And that with a collection of talent like that, you got to go undefeated, which I kind of got a kick out of. But it feels a little bit strange to me, though, George, because I think I'm the only one in college basketball that is a little down on Kentucky this year. And let me explain myself and then you can call me an idiot. It feels a little bit to me like last season was a disappointment up until you had some shooters get hot. Now we've seen, obviously you had a good team. I mean, no one's going to say that collection of talent was not talented. That's ridiculous. But I just didn't see a team all year from that Kentucky squad that just blew me away. You saw spurts, you saw little moments. We were like, oh man, if only these guys could play together. And then in the tournament, you had two guys get hot and made a bunch of shots and made shots like clutch shots, not even like shots. They were clutch shots and they just kept going in and you kind of had a date with destiny and, you know, up until the end. And that's to me, like that was awesome as a Kentucky fan. I'd be like, man, can you believe we barely got in the tournament? We were an 8 seed and then we went on to this. But at the same time, I just didn't love that team. It felt like if, you know, one of those shots doesn't go down, you know, maybe the Twins don't return. And I don't know. It's just, it feels like it's not quite maybe even last year's team or the year before, because you had superstars on that team. You had guys that were just like bona fide top five picks, no doubt. And this year you got 9 guys who will be drafted or maybe more, but maybe not the, you know, maybe not the all-star. It just seems like a little strange to me. I wanted to get your thought there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those pessimistic fans, always thinking about how our team's going to lose as opposed to enjoying in our successes. I don't know if you guys have one of those on your show, but yeah. I'm that one. So that's kind of my fear heading into the year is we do not have, you know, even a Julius Randle of last year, a James Young even. And, you know, you say it's bona fide top five talent. Well, neither one of those two were drafted in the top five, but excluding that small minor detail, Julius Randle had the ability to take over a game. We saw it at the Champions Classic against Michigan State. It didn't end in a win, but there was a time there where it seemed as if Julius Randle on the low block was unstoppable.
Yeah.
We don't have that player right now. This, everything about this team is exactly that, a team. And that's kind of what we're hoping is going to happen. And I've been saying this since I saw the Bahamas tour, and I love Coach Calipari, everything he does. It's so great to watch. But if we wanted to win college basketball games this year, I think that a coach like a Larry Brown, I don't want to say this on a recorded podcast, but like a Rick Pitino, someone who is going to implement a system and try to strategically win each game, I think that this type of team is the type of team that could do that, the type of team that could maybe go for 40-0 in a weaker division like an AAC or a Conference USA back before it dissolved. It seems like Cal is not interested in 40-0. He's not interested in winning basketball games. And I think some of the disappointment that comes from a year like last year is a lot to do with the way Cal wants to develop his players. I know it sounds like a broken record when he says players first and he's only interested in these individual players, but for all accounts going into this year, it seems that that may be true. And this platoon system that he's running is probably not going to be the best way to win college basketball games. There's definitely advantages, and we can get into those. But at the end of the day, if you have a guy like Willie Cauley-Stein, a returning junior that is pretty much unmatched athletically at his size, speed, and the ability to guard a point guard down to the center, you want him on the court as much as possible. Cal's going to put him on the court for 20 minutes max, you know, and it's because he said it in his press conference today, he wants to give these guys the most fair chance to prove it on the court, mainly to what he didn't say is probably to NBA scouts and NBA teams thinking about drafting these guys. He wants a lot of the regular season to be the games are going to be like pretty much an audition of the talent on his team trying to get everyone drafted. And I think that he forces players to create individually. He doesn't really have a great offensive system. It's more reliant on players creating in one-on-ones and seeing the court and making passes on their own. And he teaches them more overall theories than actual plays that he runs. And then by the time he gets to, you know, the Final Four area or the second day of the tournament, his players have developed skill-wise throughout, and it seems like he usually kind of starts playing college coach again. He starts calling plays. He gets the ball to his best players. We saw in the tournament last year, you know, Julius Randle turned into basically an energy rebounding guy, which is kind of what his best college basketball talent would be.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was trying to expand Julius's game throughout the season. And I think that's what you're going to see here. So going into it, yes, we don't have a superstar, but we don't have any glaring weaknesses on this team. And I don't expect you to have watched the Bahamas tour, but from watching the Bahamas tour, some of these players coming in that weren't as highly rated on the preseason high school rankings, like a Carl Towns, like a Tyler Ulis, are actually pretty unique talents.
First of all, George, we did watch the Bahamas tour.
Wow, you guys are fans.
Andrew, vouch for me here.
We hated it.
Yeah, but we watched it because there, you know, there's lots of interesting players on the other teams.
We hated it though. We did.
There was a Kansas player on one of the other teams. What was that guy's name? He had a big old pro.
Kevin Young.
That's right.
Yeah, and, we're watching it just to watch Kevin Young, I'll be honest.
How old was Kevin Young there?
23.
Yeah, 23, 24.
Yeah, and for me, those teams they were playing in the Bahamas had guys like Kevin Young on it. And regardless of his absolute talent or ranking out of high school, the dude is like 5 years older than the entire Kentucky team, you know? And it seemed that the Kentucky system and the platoon system started wearing down these professional basketball teams. Now, they lost the last game, probably because they played 6 games in 8 days. But they were able to, at some points, especially the first 3 games that they played all the teams, absolutely dominate professional athletes. And after I saw that, it kind of made me think we could have something special here this year. I don't know. Was that your all's takeaway from the Bahamas tour?
Mostly, I was just watching it to see if Kevin Young would score on you guys. And okay. then I turned it off.
I want to talk a little bit about this platoon system, or what, right. I don't know what they're calling it.
Five in, five out.
Right. So that's the theory, five in, five out. So let's just run back a little bit. Kentucky had 2 exhibition games against Pikeville and Georgetown, but Georgetown, Kentucky, obviously ran away with both of them. How was his substitution patterns in those games? Did it fit along with his platoon system, or how have they kind of explained how this is going to work?
Exactly, strictly to what he did in the Bahamas tour. And he's been explaining this the whole time. He's going to try out this platoon system, he's calling it, for the first 10 to 12 games. So the first starting lineup is kind of the veteran team. You got the weird part about having the Harrison twins is if you're going to run a platoon system, it'd probably be better to balance the teams out by putting one Harrison on each side, right?
Yeah.
They kind of do the same thing. There's a lot of talent overlap between the two. As well, they should be. They're twins. But you can't play them separately. So you have the Harrison twins on the first unit. Alex Poitras is playing the three, which, to be honest with you, he's not a natural three. This is one of our big weaknesses of the team. We do not have a three man. And then we have down low, Carl Towns, the only freshman on the starting lineup, and then, of course, Willie Cauley-Stein. So that team is kind of his starting unit. Those are kind of his five best players right now. And then the second team is really the second best players, the second best five. But they're coming in a lot fresher after the first 5 minutes, and they're just doing five-minute rotations, and even so much that second five – and you guys are Kansas fans, so I'll just run through the list real quick. It's Tyler Ulis, 5'6" or something, at point guard, Devin Booker at shooting guard. And then Trey Lyles, he's really a power forward coming out of high school. He was our highest rated recruit coming in. He had an injury. He's a little bit behind everyone. He's playing the small forward position, another weakness. And then you have Marcus Lee and Dakari Johnson down low. So those second five actually start the second half in order to even the minutes out. So he's really paying attention to these minutes, and we're starting to learn all these NBA advanced scouting methods of player usage and efficiency and defensive efficiency, stuff that usually only fantasy basketball players listen to. Now the Kentucky fan base now knows what all these numbers mean, because that's how everyone's judging this, because you don't have 30 to 40 minutes worth of stats, so you have to kind of extrapolate it over a 35-minute starting lineup, you know. So I don't know if this is going to be the best system, and he doesn't know if it's going to be the best system. He says he's going to try it for the first 10 to 12 games and then adjust as it goes. We also have 2 backup players, and Dominic Hawkins, who was actually from Kentucky, he was a freshman last year. He had a couple big layups against the UofL in the tournament game. He's kind of the backup guard, and he can kind of come in on either platoon system if a guard is not playing well, there's a bad matchup, or there's foul troubles. And then we have Derek Willis, who happens to be a Kentucky guy as well. He's kind of a 6'9 stretch four, so he's the big man substitute for both platoons.
George, this doesn't make any f-ing sense to me.
this whole system?
Here's why. Okay, so let's talk about foul trouble. Next thing you know, if you're practicing all day with these five, now you're subbing a new five or a new guy in the five. I mean, or, you know, scouting, like, it's pretty easy. I mean, if they're really going to do that, I mean, you know who you're going to match up with. You know how to, you know, put your lineup out there against that five. It just, it's, It seems a little weird to me, and I say this all to say that I just don't think he's going to really do it once things actually start happening. Like against KU, I just don't think he's going to do the 5-in-5 out the whole game. I refuse to believe it. Do you think he really will?
Cal, I love him to death, but he does have a little arrogance about him. And it wouldn't surprise me if he does stick with it for the first 10 to 12 games. I agree with you. It's a horrible, like I said in the beginning, it's not the best way to win college basketball games. But he also doesn't really care about winning college basketball games. He cares about developing pros and getting the highest draft picks. And everything else kind of falls in line after that. It's all players first for Cal. I don't think he will. I don't think he will in a game that matters. But I also don't think that he really cares a whole lot about winning the KU game. I think that's more of a fandom thing for me. I wish he wouldn't do this. You know, and it, like you said, the matchup wise, it's a lot easier to match up against us knowing exactly what's coming in and coming out. And in our game against Georgetown, Andrew Harrison fouled out. You know, he fouled out with like 8 minutes to go in the game because Cal didn't care. Obviously, we're playing Georgetown, but it's also in order for the numbers to work out, you have to have 5 minute stretches of that platoon playing. And if one guy's not playing well, what are you going to sub out the whole platoon just for another one? So it's insane. And our best lineups that we can put out lineup combinations for guaranteed for specific type of strategies that we want to run. I mean, we could put out a lineup of four guards around a big really easily. We have four good guards.
Right.
We can put a lineup of one point guard around a whole bunch of tall dudes. You know, we got that too. And I think we're going to use that in the tournament, maybe even in the conference tournament, hopefully against U of L. But I'm afraid against Kansas, he's going to stick with that system until he's down 10 and the second half starting. It's
interesting.
What's going to happen.
Interesting. Andrew, did you have a question? You looked like you were chomping at the bit there.
Oh, I don't know. Just what do you think the matchups are going to be like with KU? I mean, anything specific they're going to do, or how do you see this game going down?
Well, I think the one way to really attack Kentucky and to beat us is to get us in a slowed down game. Like the platoon system only really works because you have people who are coming in fresh every 5 minutes. And we saw that happening in the pros, against the pros in the Bahamas. And we're going to try to speed up the game. We're going to play full court press, at least Cal's version of full court press, which is basically man-to-man defense, except the entire court. And we're going to try to speed the game up. We're going to try to throw a bunch of lobs. And we're going to start off with Aaron Harrison and Andrew Harrison. It's their team, basically, in that first platoon. And it's a bunch of Harrison dribbling on the perimeter, trying to get a pick and roll lob to Willie Cauley-Stein. That's the whole first team platoon system. And then Carl Towns is kind of the guy who gets all the garbage buckets and can also shoot from the outside. The second platoon comes in, and it's all about Tyler Ulis's crazy energy. He's super small, but also super fast. And he picks up full court too. So we're going to be trying to push the ball full court, trying to make our depth actually matter. And, you know, you've been to these Champions Classic games, Kevin. The games are all broken up with so many timeouts. You know, that worries me a lot. I feel like our strategy is not exactly going to go down the way that it looks like on paper. But then again, we're beating dudes by 70 points, and they're all 6'5", but we're beating them by 70 points. So it's hard to tell. We haven't seen it really any adversity with this squad yet, and it's funny to say that because we're two exhibition games in, but it feels like the Bahamas tour meant something to these guys. So I don't know. I think we're going to try to beat every team we play, you know, in the paint. That's basically we've got four big men who are all eventually NBA big men. You know, you forget Dakari Johnson's going to be coming off the bench after Willie Cauley-Stein gets out. I think we're going to try to attack you guys inside and win every board. You know, every board that's out there is really considered ours, and that's kind of how we've played. We throw up a lot of just junk shots that even look like alley-oops that are just throw it up in the glass and hope someone gets it. So,
well, it's definitely, it's definitely a scary game for us. We haven't had a lot of success against Kentucky. It's kind of sad to say we've beat everybody else. In fact, you know, pretty much everybody else, but for some reason we got a little block on Kentucky. So kind of hoping we come out and, you know, put a little game together like we did against Duke last year early on. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. I was on another Kentucky podcast a couple days ago there. And some guys were talking about how Kentucky fans don't really like the Champions Classic because they think that, because of Cal's system, he's always going to have freshmen and they're never going to be ready and they're going to win. They're going to lose this game, you know, against an early crazy good opponent almost all the time. And I was like, well, you know, I don't know. I don't think you should really approach it that way. You know, I think self approaches it for two things. One, you're obviously on a huge stage. It's good for the new program to be on the big stage at all times. And number two, if you lose, you knock the team down a peg or two and build them back up, which is what self definitely likes to do. And I think Cal kind of does too. He likes to kind of put people in their place a little bit just to you know, make sure that he's getting the most out of them and not, you know, maybe they're not as good as they think they are type of thing. What do you think of the Champions Classic itself?
Well, I love it as a fan. I'm going again this year.
Are you?
It's in Indianapolis, so it's just a quick drive for me.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's my favorite. I mean, you get those four teams playing in there are basically Kentucky fan rivals. You know, we love competing against those teams because we feel like, I mean, that's the best part about it. It's an upper echelon type tournament. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know if Michigan State belongs there, but I'll take Duke and Kansas and Kentucky, and I could watch those three programs all the time. You know, I think this year, though, that excuse of Kentucky is just young and just that goes out the window.
Yeah.
Like I said in the beginning, these roles are reversed. Like, I feel like you guys do have, you know, some experience coming back with Perry Ellis and Felden. But it seems to me that Cliff Alexander is kind of your NBA player. And same with Kelly Oubre. Is that how we're saying his name this year? You know, I feel like that's your all's game-changing talent. The other guys are great college players, and that's what we have this year. We have a bunch of Perry Ellis's, basically. You know, really good college players that a couple of them, maybe Carl Towns is a legit pro, but I don't see a lot of game-changing talent. And, you know, we're going to try to make you guys make mistakes. We're going to be the team who's coming in knowing a system, knowing each other, and we're going to try to make your all's freshmen make the mistakes. Now, we could get out there, and Cliff Alexander scares the bejesus out of me. I mean, he could come out there and just dominate down low. He's going to give guys like Marcus Lee and Willie Cauley-Stein a lot of trouble, these skinny guys. We really only have Dakari Johnson's really the only guy that can match up with him. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that the whole idea of us coming in unprepared, that excuse is gone. You know,
yeah.
Now Cal might put it in with this platoon system and make it look like we're unprepared, but we should be prepared. That's not an excuse this year.
All right, give me your prediction. What's the final score?
Oh man, I gotta be honest. I'm feeling so confident about this team. I would be a little disappointed if this is a close game at the end. I think you guys are gonna come out and get up by 8 to 10 points after the first platoon comes in, which is kind of the way we've been going. We're a little sluggish in the beginning. And then the second platoon is going to come in and give us a little energy. And it's usually that third change halfway through the first half where our starters come back in after you guys have played for 10 minutes. Our guys are pretty fresh. That's when we've seen the big boost. We usually take a lead into halftime. And then in the second half, I have a feeling we're going to wear you guys out. I predict, you know, 10-point-plus victory. I know that sounds offensive, but at the end of the day, I'm a Kentucky fan, and I think my team's awesome this year. This is the most excited I've been about a team before.
Fair enough. Well, one last question. I've actually had a few people ask me this on Twitter. When is the fumble coming back?
Oh, really? You're going to put me on the spot like that?
a couple of KU fans have asked, like, when's the fantasy fumble coming back?
Every single day, a little bit of my inner child dies that I can't do that fantasy fumble. That's right. My favorite thing every single day. I'm pushing brick, man. I'm selling houses these days. I don't have time, and I know it's a horrible thing. And my fantasy football team's taken a hit this year.
Terrible.
I'm 5-5, Kevin. I'm terrible this year.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, man. We will definitely have you back on again next time we play Kentucky, and maybe even before then. Maybe when we see you guys in the Final Four, we'll have you back on to discuss. Actually, I'll have you know that before this, before you came on, we did our Final Four picks. Andrew had you in the Final Four, but I did not.
Andrew sounds like a smart man.
Yeah, you know, some people say that.
I didn't say we're going to win,
though. Changing the tire. But, you know,
he got done.
Wait, I want to hear your all's prediction for the game. I know, I guess I could have listened to it in the beginning, but
We haven't done it yet. You're going to hear it live, George.
Okay, so I'm going to have to wait, or you can
tell you right now. Andrew, what's your prediction?
KU by 2. 3-pointer to win.
3-pointer to win? Who shoots it?
Any reason? Any reason why?
Oh, we can get into it. Sviatoslav is going to – secret weapon. Secret weapon,
is he?
Sviatoslav.
Is this guy a secret weapon? I wasn't even going to – I got your all's roster in front of me. I wasn't even going to try to pronounce it. 6'8 guard. Is he a legit 6'8 guard? Is this a real
dude?
Yeah,
danger? Real thing.
Okay. That kind of scares me, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he'll play some minutes. You'll see him. I have Kentucky winning 78-72.
So, close game.
Yeah, I think that the spread, Andrew, what do you think the spread's going to be? I think it's going to be somewhere around 3 or 4 for Kentucky. And I think Kentucky
probably.
I think Kentucky covers. That was my initial thought when I started thinking about it. So 78-72 Kentucky, but you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Kansas does play well in this game. I think they're going to have to play well, obviously, to keep up with the 40-0 Kentucky basketball team. But George, thank you so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it. Friend of the podcast, I'll have you guys know that this podcast probably wouldn't be here if not for George teaching me how to do this stuff. So thank you very much. Definitely friend of the podcast.
All right, guys. Be good.
All right. We'll talk to you later. All right. Andrew. We don't need any more introduction here. I don't know if KU can win this game.
What?
I'm not feeling great.
But see, that's your style. You're that type of KU fan where, I mean, you picked against KU against Iowa State.
Like, I did?
You did. Go back and listen.
Oh yeah, I think I did. But I was right.
In the big games, this is just who you are. And there's a lot of people like this.
No.
The big games, you pick against KU, and then when it happens, you are just delightfully surprised. Like, you want to have that.
I do want that, but I also feel like I look at it as I try to step back. Like, I try not to be a KU fan when I pick games. Because I don't know. That's just what I do. I think that reasonably, I think that's the outcome. I don't feel great about it, but damn it, I hope we win, because that will make me very happy. What do you think about closing off on a little KU football?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you've lasted long enough to listen to football, because it's something, you know, that needs to be talked about a little bit. We got the win against Iowa State. See, I wish we had more time to talk about it, but let's just talk about it briefly. Kevin, we stormed the field.
Yeah, we did.
We watched them do it. We didn't run out onto the field. You and I didn't.
No.
Run out onto the field. We watched the students, and we were like, okay, that's fine. Let them have their fun. That's great. Like, you know, get some excitement for the program.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. But we left. Went out the tunnels into the parking lot. Come to find out later that the big mob at the center of the field tore down the goalposts.
All 3,000 of them.
Yeah. So maybe. What do you think about this tearing down the goalpost after beating Iowa State? Is this the worst teardown we've done in recent memory?
So I got in a Twitter fight with Tolly Cochran about this Tolley, of course, for the old KU beat writer for the Capital Journal, now down in Texas. I said that this was not as bad as the last Iowa State one, where we tore them down for like the sixth time that season to go to the bowl game.
Yeah, that's the infamous the Hawks are bowl eligible game.
The bowl eligible teardown.
That we didn't end up going to a bowl game that year.
We tore those down so many times that it was getting silly. And at the time, my reasoning for saying it was silly was, hey, we're actually winning games. We're starting to look like a decent football program. If we're going to be taken seriously at all, we can't just be tearing down these goalposts every time we win a damn game. Things have changed since then, Andrew. Things are not near as rosy as they were at that time. And honestly, I'm happy that they tore them down. I don't give a shit. You know why? Because we don't have any excitement around this program. There's no one that's interested at all. The students didn't show up till the second half and they're like, oh man, heck, we're winning. I'm okay with it coming down. I don't really care. I think it's fine because we're such a dumpster fire. Like anything to get the team excited, anything to get the fans excited. I mean, if we start winning a bunch of games, obviously you don't want to do that, but man, for now, who cares?
It's not a big deal, but when you get on the cover of USA Today and USA Today tweets it out in a negative light, you know, what's that make your fan base look like?
What's it make it look like losing every freaking game?
Well, we didn't lose. We
I
won
know,
this one.
But I'm happy that we won a game. I don't care if we tear down the goalposts again. I actually, you know, what if we tear down the goalposts this weekend? Let's talk a little TCU.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
What?
No.
Andrew, all right, you just said that I'm a negative KU fan, and I'm telling you that TCU is ripe for the upset.
Okay, so we have the role reversal here. Usually you're the one who's really pessimistic about things, and I'm picking KU to win 200-4 every game. But, yeah, that's not going to happen.
Listen, TCU beat KU in basketball that one time. Remember that?
I do.
This game has the same thing, except we're going to reverse the roles a little bit. They were really good. We were really good at basketball. They're really good at football. And that's just out of nowhere. We're going to win the game just like they did. It's going to be a disgusting, ugly, drag out, terrible, snowy, cold, wet game that somehow the blue team's going to prevail.
So this is revenge for that basketball game.
That's exactly right.
The karma for that basketball
that
game.
That is exactly
finally,
what this
finally
is.
Get our little piece back from them.
TCU is going to overlook us. We got senior day. We got Bowen day. We're going to have a foot of snow. Hopefully it's going to be a perfect ripe conditions for a little upset.
That's okay. I like that point of view. You may have convinced me.
Good. All right. See, that's,
I don't think it's going to happen. But,
well, fair enough.
Okay, so it's supposed to snow. It's supposed to be really cold. You going to be out there?
I think so. I think we are. Are you going to be out there?
I'm planning on it.
How bad does it have to be for you not to go?
Oh man. Well, if the roads are bad.
If the roads are bad, you're not going to go.
If the roads are real bad.
Here's an equation for you. Let's say the roads are not bad, but it's 22 degrees out and it's a light snow.
Well, that's what it's going to be. That's like,
I know,
the minimum.
No, Lindsay, I'm
probably
going to go to the game if it's snowing. My wife says no. So there's the answer for us. So hopefully it's not snowing. Either that or I'll be going with you by myself.
Well, I hope to see y'all out there.
Yeah.
I'm on board with this upset.
All right. You convinced me.
I was negative Nancy about it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in.
All right, good.
It's revenge for that basketball game. If you frame it in terms of the basketball thing,
that's
makes perfect sense because it's the exact opposite.
Yep, that's where I'm coming from here. Well, let's get out of here, Andrew. We are now over an hour. Thank you to George Barrett for coming on and previewing Kentucky. I think you brought some interesting points. Thank you to you, Andrew, for agreeing with me that TCU is going down this weekend.
Barely. Just barely.
TCU is going down. We thank you all as well for listening. We will catch you next time on the Jayhawk Talk podcast.
I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us, they know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel, they know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering. All them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court, so we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together, but win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man, but one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause